Hey, it's Chaz and AJ in the morning.
Hey, what's going on?
Thanks for listening to the podcast. Here are some of the best parts from today's show.
Listen to it, please. Thank you.
And please subscribe, share, like, comment, all that stuff.
All of it, please.
Thank you. How concerned should we be? We'll ask Dr. Ron Clark in a second. I just want to give you a quick update here. This is what's happened since yesterday. There's an additional 6 Connecticut residents that have tested positive for coronavirus, bringing the total number of positive cases reported in the state to 26. Saturday was frightening. I woke up, it was 12 cases, and then by about 5 p.m., it was 21 cases.
Damn.
Like, holy crap.
That's a spike.
Governor yesterday signed an executive order taking the following actions. Public school classes statewide will be canceled starting tomorrow through at least March 31st.
Wow.
He authorizes the DMV commissioner to close branches to the public, conduct business remotely, and extend deadlines. Allows restrictions on visitor access to psychiatric facilities. I believe a few days ago, there was one similar with nursing homes.
Yeah.
Governor Lamont is requesting that Small Business Administration issue a declaration enabling Connecticut small business owners to receive disaster assistance. And responding to the national shortage of hand sanitizer, the state today issued a set of rules to pharmacists so they can begin producing and selling their own hand sanitizer while ensuring its effectiveness and safety. So here's the deal with that. Make sure you buy it from someone reputable.
Exactly.
Like a pharmacist.
I spent all of Friday looking. No, Wednesday. It was Wednesday looking for hand sanitizer.
All right. We'll get to your adventures in a bit, right?
Yes.
Okay. How concerned should we be, Doc?
Definitely an increased level of concern today, Chaz. Since last time we talked, things look like they're getting a little worse right now.
Where would you put it on a 10 scale?
We're up to like probably a 9. We definitely went up from my 7 from last time. And again, I don't want anyone to panic, but we need to talk about these kind of things so that we can prepare and do the best that we can to keep everybody safe. But there's definitely an increased level of concern. I know you guys were talking before about the death rate. Right now, they think it's about 1% versus the flu, which is 0.1%. That's a huge difference, though. You know, compared to other things, the death rate being at 1% is really a big deal for this. That's a lot of people. That's 1 in 100 people. That's a huge deal.
It's a huge deal, especially when you look at the numbers of people who they think will get this. They're saying 40 to 70% of Americans.
Yay.
Correct. It's very contagious, and you know, they describe it kind of as a wave. That in Connecticut, the wave is kind of small right now. That wave is going to get bigger and bigger, and eventually break on Connecticut. And then the question is, what happens to the healthcare system as far as the capability to keep to take care of patients and provide, you know, capacity to care for all these patients? And that's what we're trying to work on, is ramping up the capacity to take care of the patient, opening beds, and, you know, hospitals are canceling elective surgeries to make more room for patients that are eventually going to show up in the emergency rooms and the hospitals. It's very interesting with the drive-through testing, too, to keep the worried well, the people who don't need to be in the hospitals out of the hospital and not infecting other people.
I saw that in Waterbury. I think they're doing it in Hartford, too, right?
Yep, Hartford Healthcare is doing it as well. They're starting very soon at Hartford Hospital, and I believe at Midstate as well. But basically, the theory is to keep people away from who are potentially could have the COVID disease away from others. You call the line. Hartford Healthcare has a COVID line that you call, and you're screened. If you seem like you're a high risk patient, they put you on with a doctor. The doctor speaks with you, puts in the medical order. Because remember, it is a test. You need a medical order for a laboratory test. And then they tell you, they direct you to the location. You literally pull up, show your ID, show your license to confirm who you are. And there's people there that are all gowned up and have the proper precautions taken at that point in time to then basically take a swab from you. And then you drive away and you get your result in a couple days. The theory is to kind of decrease the density of people who have COVID disease from being around other people, so that, you know, the popular word is the social distancing and keeping, you know, 6 feet you know, is kind of what it is right now. But we want to keep people away from each other so that they're not spreading it because it is very contagious.
Do we have the healthcare workers to sustain what's about to happen?
Well, that's the main concern right now is, do we have enough healthcare workers? Right now we think we do. They're also calling on retired doctors and nurses, medical schools.
Retired.
Just to be on backup right now, because what's going to happen is if the medical worker comes in contact with a
they'll
COVID patient, say I was the ER doc and the person was COVID positive. If that happens, you're on quarantine for 14 days, so you're out of the lineup. It's like a war where someone gets injured and someone else has to take that spot. Eventually, you may run out of doctors and capacity. We're hoping that's not going to happen, and we're doing everything we can in Connecticut and throughout the U.S. to minimize the impact and the spread of the COVID disease, but it's definitely a huge concern. And again, that wave is coming and getting bigger. And you think about it, it's getting bigger and bigger, and eventually it's going to hit the beach, and the beach is Connecticut right now. And we're trying to do everything we can to ramp up capacity. But everything is shut down. I think that's the right thing to do right now. And again, you don't want to incite panic with people, but right. You also want to have people be informed and take care of themselves and stay safe. And part of staying safe, you know, the two big things that I would tell the listeners right now is hygiene, you know, wash your hands like we keep talking about. Don't touch your face. Clean surfaces. Stay away from people who are sick. And if you are sick yourself, stay away from other people. So do the right thing and stay away from people so that you don't infect others. The second thing is the social distancing. Just be by yourself. You know, stay with your family and stay away from sick people.
Is there another country that you guys are looking at saying, yeah, it's going to be like that in a week or so?
Well, we're hoping that basically everyone's looking at China because that's where it started. The cases in China are already going down, but they already had their wave that came through. Our wave hasn't started yet.
Right.
And we
have
no idea.
Can I say something about China?
Yeah.
Not to interrupt you.
No, it's fine.
But they had a whole different way of handling it. They were just pulling up in vans and grabbing people off the street and throwing them in the van and
right.
locking them up. I mean, we're not doing that here. We won't do that here.
Right.
I mean, so they had extreme measures to contain it.
They took care of it, yeah.
Yeah.
Right. And, yeah, for us, we don't know what it's going to ultimately be. And, again, it is very contagious. It does have a high mortality rate. Again, 1% doesn't sound like a big number. 1 in 100 people. And, you know, coming through my ED any day, there's usually 300 and something people. So it's, you know, a couple people every day could potentially, you know, die from this just at one hospital. And then times all the hospitals in Connecticut, it could be a really serious thing. And right now there's, I think, 69 dead throughout the U.S. and somewhere around 3,774 cases in the U.S. right now. But again, it's a huge concern. The other thing is, you know, what happens if we run out of the ventilators? What happens if we run out of the doctors? What happens then? All of a sudden, doctors are in a huge, very bad position of, you know, rationing care and deciding who gets the care, who gets that ventilator if we don't have enough. Because, again, there's people think that when you go to a hospital, there's an unlimited supply of machines and equipment. There's only so many ventilators. They're very expensive. And, again, the ones that are coming to the hospital are the ones that are going to be the sickest. But eventually we may run out of equipment to take care of them. We hope that's not the case. We're trying to ramp up what we can. But, again, it is a huge concern because we don't know how tall that wave is going to get that's going to hit Connecticut.
Well, you keyed in on something there big time, is that we're just going to run out of stuff.
Yeah,
exactly.
For the doctors. You know, China built a couple of hospitals in like 2 weeks.
They did.
Right?
Yep.
Yep.
They did.
I don't see us doing that.
Yeah, we have a different system here where it is very difficult. I mean, hospital building takes years to do here with regulation and different things that have to happen. You know, one thing that was floated is the National Guard coming into hospitals and setting up like tent cities and things like that. If the need is there and if the space is needed, that's, you know, if we run out of space, that is one possibility. Again, people are innovating every day, Chaz. Something changes with this virus right now. And again, the level of concern is high. And again, no one should panic. I tell you every time I'm on as an ER doc, I never panic. I try to prepare so that I can do the best I can for my patients. But it's even changed to the point now at my hospital when you're a visitor to come in. One, the visitors, like you were talking about before, are severely restricted right now. You know, nursing homes, you're not allowed visitors unless the patient's on hospice care. at the hospital right now, at my hospital, the Hospital Central Connecticut, we have a one visitor policy right now. But when you try to get in the door now, it's almost like the TSA at an airport, where you go through and there's somebody there who actually takes you. Like if you try to come in to visit me, Chaz, they would take your temperature at the door. You'd fill out a questionnaire about what your travel history is, what your exposure is. If you're high risk, you get turned around and you leave. And now coming into the emergency department, which is a new thing that we have, there's someone screening you at the door for high-risk COVID patients. Did you have travel to a place that's infected? And again, when I was on the show last time, I was talking about travel to, you know, China, Iran, Italy, South Korea, those kinds of things. Now it's, did you travel to Massachusetts, New York, California, Washington? Now we're talking about domestic travel to hotspots or also COVID risks just because of the hotspots that are there. If you say yes to those things or you're a high-risk COVID patient, they give you a mask. They send you out of the emergency department around the corner to come in the ambulance bay a different way, and they put you in immediate isolation. You know, I've been a doctor for more than 20 years. I've never seen that happen ever. And again, things are innovating as we go. There's just all this innovation and different things that are happening to try to avoid exposure.
Once you know you have coronavirus, right? Once you're diagnosed,
yep.
Why do you have to stay in the hospital? Why can't you just go home and just stay home?
Because if you're dying and you can't breathe and your oxygen is low and you have fluid and pneumonia in your lungs.
Okay. So those are extreme cases.
I'm talking about the extreme cases. Exactly. Because that's the whole point of those drive-thrus, is so that if you are what we call the worried well, and you have coronavirus.
What does that mean, worried well?
Worried well is someone who doesn't need to be in my emergency department. You're not respiratory distress. You can breathe. You're basically sick, and it's like getting the flu where you're sick, but you don't need to be in the hospital. You don't have low oxygen called hypoxemia. You're not in respiratory distress. You're not dizzy and feeling like you want to pass out. Those people need to stay home because coming into the emergency room where I have a lot of, remember, coronavirus is just one thing in a series of people I take care of in a day. I mean, there's the chest pains that come in and the cancer patients and the congestive heart failures and the appendicitis and all kinds of other stuff. And if you start having all the worried well people who come in who actually do have coronavirus into my waiting room, you just infected everybody in my waiting room, my medical staff. And again, you can see how that can exponentially expand and cause problems.
So, Doc, you saw what they did in Italy. They're just so overwhelmed that now if you're 80 or over, they're not even taking care of you.
That's basically what it is, because they have to ration care because they do not have enough ventilators and they do not have enough other supplies that they have to make ethical decisions. And again, that's always a tough one in medical school. You know, we all medical students do ethics training, and they're tough decisions to make, to say you give the ventilator to the 30-year-old mother of two and you don't give it to the 80-year-old person who comes in. But someone has to make the decision, which is the physician. And again, hopefully we don't get to that point. I know that if we can try to limit the spread of this, I'm hoping in a month or so that the wave just goes by and we go back to our normal lives.
This is why people need to take it seriously.
Yeah, you have to take this definitely seriously. I mean, I know the patients that we've screened in my emergency department, when we screen them, we try to limit the contact that the medical staff has with them to the point where now they get an iPad. And then there's a computer on wheels that's outside the room. So the medical staff is literally interacting with like a FaceTime on an iPad so that the interaction with that patient is as little as possible. Because, again, we don't want to wipe out our medical staff. We don't want to wipe out other people who are in the hospital. And, again, the best thing to do is the people who are sick that don't need to be in the hospital, those worried well, are to stay home.
How do you know you're a worried well?
If you're worried well, if you're able to walk, talk, you don't have respiratory distress, and you otherwise feel fine besides coughing, fever, and body aches, then you need to stay home. The ones who really need to be there are the ones with underlying medical conditions, lung disease, cancers, immunosuppressed, peripheral vascular disease, or diabetes. The people who need to be in the hospital are those who have a high potential of being a fatality. But those that are not, and again, that's the younger population and people without advanced medical diseases, need to stay home so they can stay away from other people and not infect other people.
Man, this sounds like the headline that people should be talking about like every 5 seconds now.
Yeah, the word, and, and again, the other word for that is density control, is something that's being spoken in now with healthcare providers. We don't want dense pockets of disease where everyone gets it. We want everyone to be spread out so that eventually the virus dies off. Remember, all these viruses like the coronavirus or influenza, the flu, are what we call droplets. So they spread by droplets in the air. Those droplets are heavy and, again, can go about 6 feet. And that's why most of the public health people are saying stay away at least 6 feet away from other people. That's because those droplets can't fall very far. And can't travel very far. So the best thing to do is to distance at least 6 feet from each other. But again, you'd want to be a lot further than that if you can be. Stay inside your house.
Yeah, have you ever been talking to someone and then you feel like a droplet hit your eye?
Yep. Oh, yeah.
I'm like,
yeah.
Ah!
Exactly. That's why it's better off just to stay home, stay with your family, and stay away from other people until this blows off. And that's why, you know, work from home and do the things. I know everybody can't. Like, I can't work from home. I'd like to, but I can't.
Right.
You know, some people have to go in and they have jobs where you just can't do that. But the majority of people who have a job where you can do it from home should do it from home until this blows over. And, again, we're going to all get through this. But again, we all have to be smart and wash our hands and stay away from people who are sick.
How long can you have it without showing symptoms?
So it's generally 2 days to 14 days is still what they're sticking with for that. So again, everybody's different. There are some people who have it that don't have any symptoms. Is the other thing.
Brother.
So then you wouldn't
never
know,
like they never get it.
They never
get
any symptoms.
They're spreading it.
Just a carrier.
Yep. Yep. That's a tough one because we can't screen everyone. And again, people think that the test is widely available. So the corona testing, again, the first batch of the testing that was sent from the CDC had some issues with it. So now we're just ramping up the testing right now. That the testing used to be manual. Now it's automated, so they can do a lot more tests. The FDA has changed the way that private labs are allowed to do the testing. So in Connecticut now, we have the DPH lab that's doing testing. We also have private labs that are also performing the testing. So we'll be able to ramp up the tests as needed, which is a huge increase in our capacity right now.
Which means the numbers will spike.
The numbers are going to spike, absolutely, Chaz. These numbers, your 26 is going to get destroyed in a couple of days. It'll be exponentially higher than that. Because as we test more, we're going to find more patients. But the good thing is we're going to identify those patients who need to be quarantined, who need to be isolated away from others. And eventually, if we can isolate people properly, we'll let this disease die off. And then, again, the viruses eventually go away. Is that 3 or 4 weeks from now, or is that 2 or 3 months from now? I do not know, and nobody knows that answer. But again, we got to do the right things and do this social distancing to stay away from each other so we can, minimize the spread of the disease.
So if you just feel sick, keep yourself at home, stay away from people, don't go to the hospital.
Exactly. But if you feel
like you need to see someone, then go.
Then you go. Exactly. And again, that's a layperson decision. That's what you feel is your emergency. Again, in the emergency room, everyone's emergency is different, Chaz. And again, but the big ones are respiratory distress, dizziness, you feel like you want to pass out, things like that where you're not breathing properly. Those people need to be at the hospital because that's where I could intubate them and put them on a ventilator if they need to.
We talked about elderly and breathing conditions. What about children?
So kids so far have been relatively unaffected by this disease. And again, kids get coronaviruses all the time. The coronavirus, the regular one that circulates normally, is when you get a runny nose. That's usually a coronavirus. And again, for some reason, kids under 10 really aren't affected by the disease like elderly are and the other populations are.
But I'm guessing they could transmit it to others.
Absolutely. You can wipe out grandma and everybody else in between. Absolutely. So that's the problem with them is the kids look fine. And again, most kids who have any kind of disease, basically do pretty well no matter what it is. And again, particularly with viral things and respiratory things, kids do fine. But an elderly patient that has lung cancer and chemotherapy doesn't. So, we have to minimize contact, with each other and with people who are sick, no matter what their age is, because, they can spread to other people and they can cause, devastating consequences.
This is this sounds like the scenario in one of those nightmarish movies.
It does.
Yeah. Oh, I've never seen anything like this, Jeff. shutdowns where everything is shut down. I mean, my kids are out of school in, you know, ours, you know, until the end of the month. And then even at the end of the month, they're saying they're going to have to reevaluate things. And you know, I get two kids in, you know, high school and one in middle school. And, you know, they're going to reevaluate things at the end of the month to see what happens next. And again, by then we should have a much better idea of what's happened to us as far as how big that wave got that's going to crash on Connecticut, because it's going to hit us. And again, we're ready to take care of patients. The emergency medical system in Connecticut is strong, and we are prepared and ready to take care of all the people that come in.
But don't come in if you don't have to. What did you call that? The worried well?
The worried well. The worried well are the people who don't need to be in my emergency department, and they need to stay home.
That has to be the headline, because if not, you guys will be
that's
overwhelmed.
That's the headline. Seriously. And that's just a cold, hard fact that if you do not need to be in the emergency room right now, do not come into the emergency room.
All right. Dr. Ron Clark, Associate Chief of Emergency Medicine, the Hospital of Central Connecticut, New Britain General Campus. Thank you, brother. Appreciate it. All right. Let's talk to Phil, who's home right now. Hey.
Hey. Good morning, guys.
Good morning.
What are you doing at home, for God's sake? Get over here.
I'm in the bathroom right now.
Oh, we don't need to know that. Thank you.
Were you able to get toilet paper yesterday?
We did. We got three rolls, individual rolls of toilet paper that I overpaid for at a gas station.
Oh, yeah. So Phil went on vacation, got on a plane, went to San Francisco. And as this thing progressively got worse, the company decided that it would be better to not have you in the building for a couple of weeks or however long.
Well, that's the reason we gave them,
until we figure out how you are.
Right.
And
I got to be honest, that was a frustrating call to get, guys. That was really upsetting for me.
I totally
understand it.
Yeah, I am proud that the company is proactive and would rather be overly cautious than not and have it backfire.
Absolutely.
I was told to lick things.
And it's funny, just a matter of days. So last week, it seemed a little early to be talking like that.
Uh-huh.
Now it almost seems late.
Yes,
right?
I know.
So,
God's
sake.
Incredible.
They're definitely ahead of the curve with this stuff. And I honestly, based on what I've been reading, based on what I just heard from Dr. Ron Clark, I don't think we're too far away from me being home on the air.
Right.
I don't. Yeah. I don't.
I'm still coming in there.
You come over to my house.
Okay. That's a long commute, goddammit.
Yeah, we'll use AJ as a, you'll be our crash test dummy.
Exactly. What?
You should bring the cat, and then the cats can have their own show afterwards.
Right. Yeah, no.
All right, well, we're going to have you do sports each hour on the phone just to have you. And it's incredible that there's no sports, but that's the news.
Yeah.
That there's nothing. There's sports for how many weeks?
Right. Not even Tom Brady?
Like 8 weeks.
Everything's sort of just indefinitely, yeah. The only two exceptions really seem to be the Summer Olympics, which have not delayed even a day. So they're planning to still host those in Japan in July on time. More on that in a second. But the UFC is the only other sort of like major sporting company that's still hosting events. As a matter of fact, they did so in Brazil on Saturday, just over the weekend. UFC president Dana White has even sort of criticized the other professional sports leagues for overreacting.
Nah.
So they have four planned events over the next five weekends that he is insisting take place. So
that's when you're putting money in front of people.
Yeah. Yes.
You know, that's what I'm very proud of this company. We never, ever do that. We didn't do it for 9/11. We never done it with any of the storms, the hurricanes, Superstorm Sandy.
Absolutely.
It's always about the people first. So.
Yes.
All right, Phil, we'll chat with you in a little bit.
You got it, guys.
All right.
Get out of the bathroom.
I was actually a little jealous when I heard the news that Ashley and Phil got to sit home for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's like, oh, if I got on a damn plane, I'd be... No, I'm just kidding. I'd rather be here. Ashley.
Hello.
How are you?
Hello. I've been listening to the show this morning, and it's hard not to be there with you guys. I miss you guys.
Yeah, we miss you, too.
We do.
But not so much I want to get coronavirus from you.
Yeah, be in the same room.
Not that you have it.
Right, I'm just saying.
Let's make sure you don't have it.
She's special when she talks,
right.
So, you know.
Yeah.
Extra safe. Right.
Yeah. So what was it like in Florida? Were they all wigged out in Florida?
No, where I was on Sanibel Island, and it was wonderfully unaffected. Not a lot of hysteria down there. It was warm and beautiful and sunny.
Well, you know, they closed Disney.
They did.
They did close Disney. So sad, but a good idea, right?
Yeah.
A lot of people in small places at once. Probably not a good idea.
Oh, we have a ban. We can't have an event in Connecticut with 250 people or more.
Yeah.
Which,
right.
You know, takes us out of any concert, sporting events.
Comedy shows.
Comedy shows.
Right, right. Yeah.
So, all right, we'll be checking in with you throughout the day here, but good to hear your voice.
You too. Thanks, guys. All thanks, Chess.
Right. How are the big cities in Connecticut handling this coronavirus situation? Let's start in New Haven, then we'll go to Bridgeport. Mayor Elker, how are you?
I'm good. How are you doing?
Morning.
Good. What do we need to know?
I think that we have tried very, very hard to let people know to take this seriously. And many people are taking our message seriously, but there are many, many people that are not. I've heard of people gathering in large groups at bars. We had huge church services yesterday. And people need to understand that they themselves, every single person has a role in spreading this thing. And even if you're healthy and you might not get very sick, if you're young, you can be a carrier. And if you go to large events and you take this away, then you will give it to many other people, some of who will die.
Right.
And so people need to take these directions seriously.
All right. The governor signed an executive order yesterday closing schools starting tomorrow. Why not today?
Well, if I were a parent, I would not send my kid to school today.
For one day, why? Why bother?
I wonder if the one day was to give parents a day to plan.
Right, a little heads up.
Daycare or whatever.
Right, right.
But still, you're sending them all in, so what's the point?
Exactly.
Right.
Yeah, so I'm happy the governor did that. We canceled school last Friday.
Right.
And we were initially thinking of pushing it off a couple of days, but we felt that it was important enough to keep people safe to do it earlier. I think everything we've learned from South Korea and Italy and what's going on in France and Spain right now is if we don't get on top of this very quickly, then it gets quickly out of control. And so, you know, parents that are or people that are driving to work now, you think, do you really need to go to work today? Because you'll interact with a bunch of people and you may end up spreading it. People don't know. If people have their kids in daycare, do your kids really need to go to daycare? Can you find another option for them? I think that we just got to be really quick about this because otherwise it'll get out of control.
What is the policy with the city of New Haven employees? If they go traveling, are they allowed to come right back? Or what are you doing with that?
No, so we've canceled all travel out of the state, official travel out of the state. We can't control whether people get in their cars and leave, but we can't control our official travel. And today, basically only a core group of vital employees are coming into work. We've asked everyone else to stay home, and those are the police, the fire, the emergency responders, and some employees that are necessary for core government services.
Do you guys have enough masks and stuff for your first responders?
The entire country doesn't have enough these supplies, and it's everything from hand sanitizer to cleaning equipment. And this is one of the reasons why you've seen a lot of triaging of these types of supplies around. So, you know, we have enough for now to keep our employees safe. If this really spikes, I think that we'll be struggling.
The governor signed an executive order banning public gatherings of 250 people or more. So that would include nightclubs and bars in New Haven, correct?
Well, so we went more aggressive on that, and I ordered all capacity in bars to be halved and restaurants to be halved and all venues to be halved. It's possible we may go more aggressive because most bars are complying with that, but we're concerned that even so, there's enough people congregating in these places that we should be more aggressive. And as everyone knows, this is crippling on the economy, and these are very difficult decisions because we want our local establishments to succeed. If we end up having a crisis similar to the ones in Italy and France, our economy will be in way more or safe.
That's what we have to think about.
Exactly.
This is bad, but it could be a whole lot worse if we don't get a handle on it.
Exactly. Got to nip in the bud.
Correct.
All right. Anything else you want folks to know, Mayor?
I just think that people need to stop shaking hands, stop hugging people. And if they are sick, do not drive to the hospital. Call the healthcare provider first, because you don't want to spread this. This is one of the only times in my life where literally every person has a role in spreading or helping not spread this thing. And especially if you have family members that are old or people with weakened immune systems, you need to follow the directions of nursing homes, not go, because that's how we will spread this thing.
Right. All right, Mayor. Thanks. And keep us posted, please.
And you keep spreading the word. Thanks,
all right,
guys.
Thank you. All right. New Haven Mayor Elliker. We're going to talk to Mayor Ganim from Bridgeport in a second. But first, do you have that clip from Dr. Ron Clark? So he said something that the mayor just touched on, and that was, if you're the worried well, which means you're sick, but not...
you're functional.
You're functional. Yeah. Don't go to the hospital.
Right.
I was like, well, what's the worried well?
Worried well is someone who doesn't need to be in my emergency department. You're not respiratory distress. You don't, you know, you can breathe. You're basically sick, and it's like getting the flu where you're sick, but you don't need to be in the hospital. You don't have low oxygen called hypoxemia. You're not in respiratory distress. You're not dizzy and feeling like you want to pass out. Those people need to stay home.
All right. So that was Dr. Ron Clark. Mayor Ganim of Bridgeport, how is your city handling this coronavirus?
Hey, thanks for having me on.
Hey, thanks, Mayor.
I mean, we're handling it well. Like, this is one of those kind of uncharted territories, I think, for everyone, of course. We shut down, as of this morning, city government, city hall.
Completely.
Fridays. Yeah, pretty much completely. Well, let me be clear. That's not essential, what we call essential services, first responders. So the concerns remain with police, fire, 911 services. Don't want to have the impact on those services at all. So the plan is to, I call them non-essential, regular government offices. We're asking people, first of all, the door is going to be pretty much closed, so stay home. Whatever you can do online, you will. But right now, it'll be my office, and then we will, on an as-needed basis, have certain people, and a lot working remotely from home, taking what I think is the most extreme precaution we can, as early on as we can in this thing as it develops. Want to do our part. Want to avoid, you know, that one case that you get inside a big organization can cripple the organization for weeks, 2 weeks, 30 days, who knows how long. So,
do you have any cases in Bridgeport?
Well, there's cases that have been reported out of Bridgeport, out of a couple of hospitals. I don't know the exact number now, 1, 2, or 3. The first, I think you might recall, was a doctor in one of the hospitals. Those have been pretty contained as far as we know, but we haven't seen the spread, and we don't want to see the spread, but you know, we're all realists at this point. And so we're taking on our side, government side, locally, that we're telling people to do just what Mayor Elliker and everyone else is telling them to do. You know, follow the precautions, distance, hand washing, stay home if you can, work remotely. And some of the stuff can wait, unfortunately. You know, someone needs a building plan or whatever, it takes a couple of days. I'd rather, unfortunately, see that delay than you know, human health risk.
Yeah.
True.
Do you guys have school today or no?
No, we canceled last week. And we're going to...
Seems like the right thing.
It seems like the right thing, as difficult as it is. And, you know, in the cities, we talk about it. You realize the domino effect, where a lot of times you have a situation where now you have a parent who's going to be out of work because their child's home. And this is not where, okay, go out and whether there's daycare, send them out. The situation is just, you have to think through every step of the way here, at least right now. But it seems like, I mean, if you follow the news, as unsettling as it is, people are responding. I think that's, if there's good news in all this difficulty, it seems like the corporate world's getting it. They're taking and making changes. People seem to be understanding. And so we just kind of slug it out, unfortunately, in this uncertain health environment right now. But get the word out there. I'm going to go to town hall to my employees, and it'll probably be Facebook Live and so on around 12:30 about what we're doing in Bridgeport and reemphasize.
Any announcements you plan to make during that Facebook Live?
I don't think anything in addition to schools were closed earlier. The building we announced late yesterday to employees. And so no new announcements, just letting them know what we're doing. I think the questions in Bridgeport and in Bridgeport City employees' minds would be, is this for one day, for one week, for one month?
Right.
And so we're going to not have an answer to that today. We're going to try and give a little better understanding that we just don't know.
So it's until further notice.
Until further notice.
Right.
Yeah, we have to have our spike, and then we have to see it go down for 3, 4, 5 days before we say, okay,
yeah,
it's being managed. But then how much do we want to get out there right after that?
Exactly.
We want another spike.
Exactly right. Be cautious.
Well, keep us posted, Mayor. Thank you. Appreciate it.
Keep posted. You guys keep doing what you're doing. We appreciate it. Thanks.
Thank you, Mayor Gannon. Bridgeport. Mayor Joe Gannon. And David Biller, friend of the show, was someplace I don't think... Well, you want to be, but then with this going on, you don't want to be. You were in France.
Oh.
I was. Great place, bad timing.
Right.
Yes. It's their slogan now.
Yeah.
What was it like trying to get back?
You know, it really wasn't a problem getting back. The only anxiety that we really had, truthfully, were from the, you know, the text and the Facebook messages that we were getting from people essentially telling us that you're going to be stuck in Europe. You know, Trump has banned travel. You know, we stayed in contact with our local travel agent. I really went on the CDC website because watching the various news programs, you got mixed information, bad information, old information. But the CDC website gave us the greatest information of all. Even the airline was wrong. The airline told us when you get back, you're going to be whisked away to a quarantine facility, and that wasn't true. But the experience really was we got to the airport 3 hours ahead like we were supposed to, checked in. I was surprised there was zero screening whatsoever before we got on the plane.
That's interesting.
The only screening took place when we landed here in the States. I figured, you know, before they herd you onto a plane, it wouldn't hurt to take your temperature, which they did not do in Europe.
Well, I'm sure France doesn't want to keep you if
no.
you're sick.
No, of course not.
No. Well, you know, listen, I will say this, that, you know, what both mayors who were just on the line had said really rang true, which is when we left, when we were over in England, we started in England, everything was fine, business as usual, fewer crowds and things like that. France was a ghost town by the time we left.
Right.
When we would go to a restaurant, there was one table, two tables, museums were being shut down. And, you know, that's an economy that largely survives on tourism. And, you know, we're going to take a beating here. We're going to take a hit. They're in a lot of trouble. And, you know, my perspective, watching it on the news and being over there at the same time and watching things take place, is that our government here and all the way from the top down to the local level was extremely proactive. And I've seen the news reports of us being slow and to react and everything. But I'll tell you what, we were far more proactive, far more aggressive, far more vigilant as citizens than those areas of Europe that I were in. You know, they were allowing free travel back and forth across the borders. They weren't shutting anything down. And they're in trouble. They're in trouble.
Yep.
I was on vacation last week, so I wasn't really paying attention to anything. I like to unplug. And I'm getting these texts from the boss, and I'm like, this seems a little aggressive, but what do I know?
Some bold cats.
And as I clicked on and started reading the stories, I thought, oh, boy,
no.
They are on top of it. Good for them.
Yes, yes.
So, all right, David. You know what? If I were to bet yesterday or Saturday when we texted.
Yeah.
I was
in a bar when we were texting, by the way. So
nice. In France.
Nice.
I did not think you would make it here.
No.
Well, you know what? We got back. I think I sent you a picture of my daughter. We got off the plane. They screened us before we got off, checked our temperature, sent us home on a 2-week coronation, and told us to take our temperature twice a day.
Oh,
and,
really?
You know, the idea is, you can be cautious without being scared.
So you're in a voluntary confinement now.
They told us to do it. I don't know how voluntary that is, but it's, you know, no one made sure we went home. No one's checking on us. You know,
are you going to do it?
Selfish. It would be truly selfish by us to not heed that. You know, I
right.
don't want to, I mean, we feel good. We've got no symptoms. We've been screened. We're fine. You know, but God forbid, I don't want to get anybody else sick, particularly the elderly, the young, and
yes.
it would be selfish to not heed it.
Right.
Oh, good for you. So, all right. Well, I've been to your house. You have a nice house.
Seriously.
I appreciate it. And I have a computer, so I can work, so we're fine.
Right.
Perfect. All right, David, thanks for coming on. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Nice to be back from vacation. I'm sorry I was out last week. We had a scheduled vacation planned. We went out, and by Tuesday, I could see that the story of this coronavirus was taking a turn for the worse.
Yes.
And I texted back and forth with management, and we all agreed that
basically we would just come on and tell you, wash your hands.
Right.
Social distancing. You know, we weren't having a lot of news other than things were being canceled.
Right.
Parades, this, that.
Appearances, you know, all that stuff. Yep.
Right.
All gone.
So we thought it'd be more important to be in the weeks that follow. Right.
Right.
So who is not back? Ashley and Phil. They both got on airplanes, Ashley to Florida, Phil to San Francisco, and we thought just to be overly safe, we thought we wouldn't let him back in the building.
That was the reason we
thought that that would make AJ happy.
Right.
Right, that Phil couldn't come back in.
Right. It's kind of tough to throw Andrew off the roof.
Yeah, Andrew's not as easy to throw off a roof.
He might put up a fight.
Right. So Phil's doing sports from his house.
Yeah. The good news is, AJ, if I do show up, you actually get to throw me off the roof and no one would stop you.
This is true. Right.
Yeah.
You encourage me. Right?
That's right. They'd be like, get him out of here.
Get him out of here.
Yeah. Well, there is a lot to catch up on, guys. It has been an eventful sports week. Unfortunately, most of the action has been announcements regarding cancellations and postponements.
The NBA was a shocker.
Yep.
Yeah.
Tournament, March Madness just fully canceled. They decided all of the games are just going to be canceled.
So what do they do now? We don't have a winner for 2020, right?
Nope.
Is that, it'll just go down as when you're looking at a list,
actually,
no winner.
Yeah. Everybody wins. They'll get a trophy.
None. Mm. Exactly. And to make it just a tad more complicated, because they're a winter sport, a lot of those players, let's say you were a senior, normally you don't have any eligibility to return another year and have another college season. They're working right now on possibly extending some of those deadlines to allow some of these players that had a shortened season to potentially come back and play another season. They've already done so with the spring sports.
Interesting.
With the winter sports like basketball. Hasn't quite happened the same way just yet. But they're working on perhaps finding a way to make that a reality.
Baseball done?
Baseball is postponed. I wouldn't use the word done. They don't have a planned start date. The Masters has also been postponed, the big golf tournament that usually happens first or second week of April. They don't have a date announced yet either. The Boston Marathon, they've been moved. They were scheduled for April 20th. They're now September 14th. The NBA and NHL seasons are on hold until further notice. And that all sort of happened because one of the NBA players, Rudy Gobert, tested positively for the coronavirus.
Oops.
And for his thing, his test, I don't know if you guys saw this, but it really just highlighted sort of gross behavior on his end. He was going out for like a pregame sort of warm up and touched all of the microphones and recording devices that the reporters had left on the table. And then like a day or two later tested positively and they had to shut everything down.
What was the point of doing that?
Can't they arrest him for that?
You know, I think he just wasn't taking it very seriously. I think he sort of felt like, well, I can't possibly have that. I probably just have the flu or something, and thought he'd make a funny joke.
Even the flu
and
itself.
People are absolutely pissed. People are pissed.
I would be.
Yeah.
I saw you apologize, but not enough.
Yeah, really. Person's sick now.
He did apologize. He has also joined a growing number of players who have donated big dollar amounts to those affected by the shutdown of the season. So out of his own pocket, he put $200,000 just towards his arena where the Jazz play their home games to help keep those people at home and sort of taken care of while maybe paychecks aren't coming in. And he did donate an additional $500,000, I think, to various other areas where people are being very adversely affected by the coronavirus. So he's done that much. But yeah, I don't think everybody's fully forgiven him.
Sports, but I have some other things we got to get to. So I'll talk to you in an hour, Phil.
Hey, I'm here. I'm not doing anything.
We know.
Are you staying in the house, or what are the rules there?
I'm in the house, and even stranger for us guys is, Amanda's parents didn't take any kind of travel, so they're sort of staying with us.
But they're in that age group.
They right. are. They are. They are in that age group, and they had sort of been home because Amanda's father needs to have sort of like a minor procedure for a kidney stone. We don't know if that's even going to happen now.
Right.
That's, I think, technically considered elective. But while we just got back from traveling, we're sort of even quarantined within our own house, where
right.
we're trying to really limit our exposure to them, because the last thing we want to do is send them to the hospital with
right.
with
and just
this,
to be clear, Phil doesn't have any signs.
No.
Amanda doesn't
no
have any
symptoms.
Signs. Just being, no symptoms. Just being extra.
We are,
careful.
Yeah, we don't really.
Yep, we're testing our temperature like every 30 minutes. It feels like, you know, we're being as we can.
Yeah.
So that's why why that's going on.
Here's the latest. Since yesterday, there's been an additional 6 Connecticut residents that have tested positive for coronavirus, bringing the total number of positive cases in the state to 26. The governor signed several executive orders over the last few days. Yesterday, he canceled classes at all public schools statewide, effective tomorrow through at least March 31st. He gave the DMV the authorization to close branches, conduct business remotely, extend deadlines, also restricted visitors' access to psychiatric facilities, I think nursing homes. It was a few days before that. Governor Lamont is requesting that Small Business Administration issue a declaration enabling Connecticut small business owners to receive disaster assistance. And responding to a national shortage of hand sanitizer, the state issued a set of rules to pharmacies so they can begin producing and selling their own hand sanitizer while ensuring its effectiveness and safety. Well, how concerned should we be about all of this? And Dr. Brown from Griffin Hospital is on the show now. On a 10 scale, where should we be on the concern level?
You know what? I think we good morning, by the way.
Hey.
You know, we need to be concerned. But that concern is on a, you know, we need to sort of say on the 6 level. I think the problem is that there's several people who are on the 10. This is, you know, this is the viral apocalypse. And there's some at the 1. And, you know, this is a good time to be off and drink and party and be together. I think we need to be concerned. But I think we also need to make sure that we have the data to make smart decisions on caring for our vulnerable populations.
Yeah. Have you been to a supermarket lately?
I have. Yes.
There's, yeah.
I have a few interesting pictures of an entire aisle gone of all the toilet paper.
Toilet paper seems like it should be on the list, but not on the top of the list, right?
I would agree with that. I probably wouldn't have been the first thing that I would say you need to be concerned about. I can understand the Purell and the mm-hmm. hand hygiene and hand sanitizers. The toilet tissue, I'm a little just surprised about.
Overreacting.
So we have a lot of cases in Connecticut, right?
We do.
So 26 that we know of, and now that testing has been ramped up, we're expecting to see spikes, right?
We are, and I think it's important for us to sort of realize that, you know, over the last 2 weeks, as this virus has been spreading across the world and really across now the U.S. from the West Coast to the East Coast, it's important to realize that we haven't done a lot of tests. There's been a minimal amount of testing that's been done. So it's important for your listeners to realize that we're going to have an increase in the number of people who are positive, because this is the point where we're actually flashing a light on the disease. So you're actually able to see who has it and who doesn't. So the concern is that it is already here, but we really haven't been able to have a test or test enough people to figure out actually how much it is.
Who should be tested? Who should come into the hospital? How do you want us to handle handle it if we have symptoms? And then what are the symptoms?
So it's very clear from the initial Chinese data and the data in the West Coast that 80%+ of the patients who end up getting this virus have mild symptoms. So I think that's really important for everybody to know. So 80+, you know, it's very few that end up getting into that critical phase. What I would recommend is that if you are feeling severe shortness of breath, if you're having, you know, high spiking fevers, if you're struggling at home, that is the time that you really need to come to an emergency department. Otherwise, we at Griffin Hospital and Griffin Health, we're instituting telemedicine and telehealth, so you can contact your primary care doc, you can talk to them, and they can give you advice on sort of the next steps. And there's a lot of things that can have fevers and cough and shortness of breath. We are having a lot of patients that have the flu, so that's still out there, so we're still seeing people with the flu, so making sure we're testing them.
How can you tell the difference between the flu and this?
Unfortunately, you really can't. They have very similar symptoms. It's really fever, cough, shortness of breath. It sounds like some of these have been associated with body aches, both COVID-19 as well as the flu. So it's really difficult to tell unless you do the testing. The testing for the flu is a rapid test, and you can get an answer in 15 minutes.
Wow.
So at Griffin Hospital, what we're going to be doing is we're going to be doing mobile testing. We know our colleagues have also started doing this. So if you end up talking to your physician, the physician says, okay, it sounds like you need to be tested because you have fever, cough, or shortness of breath. But we want to make sure that people stay home with this. We don't want them sort of wandering out. What we've established, we'll be establishing this week here, is a drive-through. So what will happen is they will get they'll be able to get a script from their physician basically saying that it meets CDC criteria. The physician says it's fine to get tested. They'll come to our drive-through. We'll bring them in. We'll test them. What we're offering is we're going to be offering both a nasal swab for the flu and for COVID-19. So if someone comes in and we swab them, they end up having the flu, then we can get their answer pretty quickly. If it's COVID-19, right now it's taking 3 to 4 days to come back. So what we'll do is we'll recommend that they stay home, until the results get back.
Okay. But you don't want everyone tested, right? So if I feel sick, just stay home, stay away from people, right? But if
correct.
I feel sick and feel like I have some breathing issues or I might pass out, then I want to call a doctor.
That's I would say if you feel very sick, obviously I don't want to say don't go to the ER. That would be you need to be evaluated. But if you have a cough, fever, you're feeling really unwell, your physician can advise you on the next steps. I do not recommend everybody get tested. And if you don't have symptoms, the likelihood that test is going to be positive is low. So really, you would have to have symptoms.
It was just a few weeks ago we were being told by professionals that, the flu is way worse. It kills 50 to 70,000 people in the U.S.
a
year.
Yeah, yeah.
And now we're like, the flu is nothing compared to this, right?
You know what? It's interesting. Time in history tells in these sort of circumstances.
Yeah.
Interesting enough, the detection of it, going back to my initial comment about how much testing we've done for the flu, we test everybody who basically has symptoms, and we can do it pretty quick. So it's a pretty reliable and quick test to do. With the COVID-19, it's not a quick test. Hopefully we'll be able to get better tests, quicker turnarounds, and go from there. So the data that we're seeing is skewed. So really, the CDC guidelines and even the state guidelines, we're only testing people who are the very sick. So if you're testing only the very sick, it's going to look like it's a very sick disease. We're not testing all the people who have mild symptoms. And
So
you got to look at it in that way. Now, if you look at the data, the probably the most reliable data is coming out of South Korea, which demonstrates that, and they tested 100,000 people, over 100,000 people.
Wow.
And when they tested them, what they found is that it was probably as infectious as the flu, maybe a little bit less, and has a little bit higher mortality. It is a little bit higher, so you got to remember that. But that's also testing people who are symptomatic or significantly symptomatic. I mean, if someone has a mild fever and a mild cough, they may not go to the medical system, which is probably going to be overwhelmed. So you got to remember that it's likely there. So I think my opinion is, as this is all done and said, you're going to find out there's a lot of people who have actually had it and didn't really have any complications secondary to it. So we're probably going to find it's infectious or a little bit more infectious and probably less deadly than the flu.
So would you just say that this is a bad flu season, like really, really bad, or this is a whole nother deal?
In my opinion, yes, that's what I would say. It's like a very bad flu season.
Okay. Because we're starting to get caught up in a little bit of the hysteria. I know I am. Just
yes.
It's hard not to.
Italy, when, it's hard not to. I agree.
So when you look at Italy, and it's so bad over there that if you're 80 or over or have breathing problems, they're not even giving you a bed. They're like, say goodbye to your family.
Yeah, make peace.
And then some experts say we're a week behind Italy. Would you agree with that?
I think we would look along the lines of what we've done to prepare. And it's very difficult to say what was done or what was not done. Unfortunately, some countries, when they got this disease early, they probably didn't pay attention to it as well as the U.S. does. So again, we want to be careful about the hype and the ignoring it. You got to be somewhere in the middle of the road, and protecting our vulnerable population is really important. And again, I can't speak of sort of what happened within Italy, but if we're not protecting our 80 and above or our elderly population, I mean, it can go like wildfire into that population with a 15% mortality. So that's quite a bit.
15%.
When you're over 80.
Or over, okay. And then, so 1% overall, right? We're still at 1%?
It's looking from the South Korean data at less than 1%.
Less than 1%.
Okay.
Okay. And then, worst case scenario, how many Americans get this? Like what percentage?
Really tough to say. I could tell you that it looks like it's tracking it looks like at least the mortality is tracking what we'd expect to see in China. So it said 80-something percent, probably over 81%, are actually going to get, are actually getting mild symptoms. So it's going to be really hard to say how many people actually get it.
Yeah, so I read,
that's tough to say.
We could have 40 to 70% get it in the United States. And if it's a 1% mortality rate, we're looking at, 1.5 million deaths.
Right.
Right. That's
way more than the flu at 50,000 a year.
Which if you look at, and I could tell you I'm a little skeptical of that number, because if you look at China and you look at the size of the population in China, and you look at sort of what happened there, being the first ones to actually have the virus, the first ones to actually spread it, they had, documented 80,000. I mean, let's even double that, say 160,000.
And do we believe those numbers?
I mean, I'd say we throw a double in there,
right?
Right?
That's
so
good.
Throw a doubler in there.
Why not?
Very good.
Throw a tripler in there. I'm okay with that.
Okay.
I mean, you can increase it quite a bit and say, okay, so of that, how many people have died in the in that country or around the world? We're talking about over 5,000, so we're getting up to maybe 6,000 now. So if you look at that, and in China, and again, I can't give you the exact number, but let's say 1.3 billion people. That number
gotcha.
Doesn't necessarily work.
If you
go through the logic and look at it. So
however,
I am a little bit skeptical about those numbers. It doesn't mean, so we got to get it between the don't be overhyped about this, but also need to be cautious. I firmly believe that, having a 100-year-old birthday party and inviting every family and friend is probably not a good idea.
Or a wedding. Just, there's a lot of things that are just turned upside down.
Right.
Now.
And focusing on the vulnerable population is really important.
I just want to talk about China for one more second, because they handled it differently. They built two big hospitals in 2 weeks.
Yeah.
They were just grabbing people off the streets and throwing them in vans and putting them in quarantine, against their will. I mean, it was way more strict than it is here. Right? Would you agree with that or no?
I would agree with that. But even with this, they identified it later than we did. So that means the likelihood it would spread out a lot faster than they would be able to quarantine it. At some point, you can take those steps, but at some point they're not going to work.
Now, kids can get it and carry it and give it, but they don't seem to be affected or at risk, right? Like they'll get a cold or they'll get what seems to be like the flu, but they won't. There hasn't been any children dying of this.
That's correct. That's so far. And again, I think that's a really, there's a good points about that. So the first one is, yes, that is correct. They're getting some sort of mild illness. I think their, you know, immune systems are pretty ramped up to deal with most viruses because they're children. So I think you're seeing that. The data is showing, you know, 0% in a child less than 9. So that's great, 0% mortality. But it's also important to remember that we're talking about statistics. So when we're talking about statistics, you know, even though we're talking about, you know, when we talk about elderly, it could be as, you know, greater than 80, it could be up to 15%. But you got to remember that it's not zero for those who are older than 9. Only 9 has actually been a zero. Everyone else, there is a small mortality. It could be, you know, as you go to 9 to 20, you're talking about a 0.1, and it continues to go up. So everybody is essentially vulnerable to any viral infection, you know, and it's just important that we, again, take the proper precautions. And then I heard you guys talking about it. I mean, hand hygiene is probably the most important to break the cycle. I mean, this is a disease that, similar to the flu, it's associated with droplets. So being very close to someone and getting sneezed or coughed on is bad. So that spatial distancing is really important.
Oh, and people are freaked out. We went to a restaurant and we sit down, and Jennifer had one of those. You ever get a sneezing thing?
Of course, it's
just,
yeah.
You just sneeze.
Yeah.
You're not sick, but you're just sneezing.
Fit. Yeah, happens.
The second she sits down, we sit down, she starts sneezing. And now Everybody in the restaurant's looking at us like,
check, please.
Yeah. All right, so social distancing, wash your hands, don't shake hands, use your head.
Exactly. Don't use your head to, like, touch.
No.
Not right.
Maybe the elbow.
Use your
head
to think.
No headbutts.
Right. It's hard to press an elevator button with your elbow,
by the way. It really is.
So, all right, Doc, we appreciate you and Griffin Hospital. Thank you, Dr. Brown.
You're welcome. Thank you for having me on.
We talked to Dr. Eugene Seymour, retired infectious disease doctor, before we went on vacation, and he said to be more concerned about the flu than coronavirus. How do you feel about that now?
No question that the game has changed. We're still seeing flu cases, and they're easily confused with the coronavirus. But unfortunately, I just checked the death rate. The death rate is from the coronavirus worldwide, 170,000 cases, 7,000 deaths. It looks like it's about 4%. Now, you have to segment that into age groups, and I don't have that information. I don't know if anyone has it.
So an hour ago, we talked to a doctor at Griffin Hospital. He said the age group of people 80 and over is 15%. But it's about 1% for everyone.
We don't really know, because we're not getting all the data from around the world. And there is really aren't enough tests, particularly in the U.S., to really make an intelligent assessment of that situation. However, I got to tell you something that looks very exciting.
What?
I just got a press release from my old company. I haven't spoken to them in a couple of years. It says we have now completed the next two milestones, synthesis of the test candidates. In other words, they've made the drug and they developed the assays or the tests needed for testing the drug. So this is the best news yet. There is a lot of information going on about the use of certain drugs from a company called Gilead, and they're in clinical trials. But if this works, it'll be specific for the coronavirus, and we should know that in the next few weeks. That would be a cure, as opposed to a vaccine, which won't be ready for another 18 months, which would be a prevention and would be given primarily to hospital-based doctors and nurses. Now, I got to tell you, first of all, I'm in California, in Santa Monica, the big tourist town. Everything is shut down. The entertainment pier, all the restaurants, all the movie theaters, all the bars. I mean, it's like a morgue here. They're allowing the restaurants to stay open only for takeout. So, you know, for people who can't cook, like me, we will survive. People are hoarding.
Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Toilet paper.
Yep.
As toilet paper, you know, toilet paper and so on. But
toilet paper, like I have a list. Toilet paper's on it, but not on the top. It seems like it's on the top of everyone's list. What did I miss?
You should have water. If you're going to, it depends. If you're going to go to work, it's one thing. But if you're going to be stuck at home, then you you do need to make sure you have at least water, you know?
Water.
You can only use...
Job one, water.
Folks ordered water.
Next, food. And flashlights and maybe a generator, right? And then list, then maybe toilet paper down 12, 13 on the list.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because remember, you can always do it. We did as Boy Scouts. You can always use newspaper. But you've got to be prepared for long stays. Now, let me just tell you how the Chinese dealt with this. What they did is if someone was found to be infected on one of their tests, they immediately removed them from the home and put them in one of the special hospitals, hotels, or other places, facilities that were taking care of.
Yeah, they separated you immediately.
That's right. And we really can't do that here. And that's really too bad.
There are lots of stories of people with coronavirus knowing they have coronavirus getting on an airplane. So there's been lots of stories like this in the United States.
Oh, no, clearly.
Yeah.
And there's one other thing to consider. There are millions or tens of millions of people who need to work every single day in order to get the money to put food on the table. These people will continue to come to work even if they're sick.
Right.
And that's the scary thing. And that's why we need some kind of support for people like that so they don't have to come to work. Anyway, that's the good news.
What's the scary thing? Like the last time we talked to you, you said worried about the flu. And, you know, in your defense, everybody was saying the flu kills 50,000 to 70,000 people a year in the United States. This thing is not going to be that bad. And, you know, lots of game changers since that time. But what's the thing that you see that's scaring you the most?
Well, it's not going away. I mean, the talk from the president about warm water, warm weather making a change and maybe killing the virus, it doesn't hold up because the last coronavirus epidemic was in Saudi Arabia. And Saudi Arabia, to say the least, is very hot.
Yeah.
So the virus did stay alive and continued to infect people. My concern is that people are not paying attention to this. They're people are still partying. They're going to dances. They're going to large meetings of groups, and they have no idea who's infected and who isn't because we don't have any tests. So you might be standing next to somebody, talking to somebody, and they could be infected but not symptomatic. And that's the scary thing. It looks like, and this is preliminary, that you're contagious for up to 2 or 3 days before you develop symptoms. Now, once you develop symptoms, then you're absolutely contagious. And the strange and frightening thing is the virus is being shed. In other words, after you recover and you're symptomatically better, the cough is gone, the fever is gone, and you're feeling better, you could be shedding viruses up to a month. And the virus seems to be shed in the stool, very much like polio. And that's why polio epidemics got so crazy, because even though you were not clinically ill, the virus was still alive and well.
How do you come in contact with someone else's stool?
How? They don't wash their hands.
Okay. You go to the bathroom to wash your hands and shake hands with you. Boom.
Oh, from the wiping.
What about food preparers?
Yep.
What about drivers? What about, I mean, think of all the people you connect with, and you should not be shaking hands with anybody.
Yeah, I was, while I was on vacation, I'm reading these stories. I go to a restaurant. I'm like, well, I'm not going to touch anything. I'm not going to. And about a minute into, I'm just looking at everything that everyone touches. We're all connected.
Yep.
Right. There's just no way to. And I just gave up. I'm like, yeah, OK, whatever. I didn't want to touch the menu. I didn't want to touch my glass. But I just see how everything is intermingled. Yeah, I gave up.
Plastic gloves, man. Right?
The thing that, and I appreciate what you just said there. The thing that bothers me the most is Iran, Spain, Italy, these other countries who maybe are not handling it like we're handling it. Because we might be able to put the fire out here, but the fire's just going to keep coming over in planes, right?
Oh, absolutely. And many different ways. But they're doing a pretty good job in Europe and the Middle East because they have tests. We don't have any tests. I mean, this has been a massive failure of the last three administrations by not having a stockpile of these tests, especially when we knew that there were two major epidemics that killed lots of people, the SARS in 2003 right. and the MERS, the Middle East Respiratory Syndrome.
Is it the same test? So the SARS thing, the SARS, was the same test that we would use for this?
No.
Wow.
It's a different, same virus, family, different strain.
So it could be, all right, well, then how would we have the tests if we didn't know this was coming until, the first case was in November, right?
Yeah, but you had to build the basis of the test and then tweak it for this particular, this is a different strain, that's
right.
all. And now, some people are also saying, I'm sure you've heard, that we sent this virus to Wuhan as a biologically engineered virus.
Those are the conspiracy theorists, right?
A conspiracy, yeah. That's crazy.
There's always those people. They're just bananas. You know, there's the flat earthers. There's, you know, there's the 9/11, the Sandy. There's always those people.
Yep.
Yeah. So my daughter, who's a pediatrician, won't let me see my grandchildren.
I don't blame her.
Even though I've called her a blue meanie, and her office, which is the largest pediatrics office in Arizona, half the doctors feel that they should keep doing business as usual. Yet in Aspen, Colorado, where one person from Australia came and infected 10 people, her friends, they've locked the doors of the emergency room, locked the doors of my son's clinic, and if you have an infectious disease, a cough, a fever, anything like that, you don't get in. So they're taking broken legs and arms and lacerations,
right.
but they're not taking infectious disease. So where do you go? There's no place to go, no hospitals.
Well, let's think this one out a little bit. That one's not a bad thought, right?
No.
Other than, you know, people with respiratory problems and people over 80, they should have a special place for them. But
exactly.
They're not going to infect the hospital. They're going to try to keep it outside, even though someone might walk in with it, not knowing.
You know, when I was in the Army, we were set up for this. We had tents that could be erected very quickly. We had isolation gear, ventilators. We don't have enough ventilators. We don't have enough masks. And my daughter tells me that for her whole clinic, which is the busiest, they have three tests. And my son, the emergency room doctor in Aspen, has no tests.
Mom.
So we're really behind the eight ball on this. And we can't go back and look at the mistakes that were made. They were made.
Right. We're here now, and that's what we got to deal with.
Yes.
How long does a germ, let's just say I touch this counter, right? And let's just say I have coronavirus. I touch the counter. How long is that germ there?
It could last 8 to 12 hours.
8 to 12?
That long?
6 to 12 hours. You know, it depends what you're touching. And on various surfaces, the virus can live. And that's why they're scrubbing down all the surfaces and the buttons on the elevators and things of this sort.
And instead of using my finger, I just use my tongue when I'm pressing the elevator button.
Right, it's more fun that way, yeah.
Why not just go direct?
I use my nose.
That's not good.
So I thought it was 3 hours. That's a lot longer than I thought.
Way longer. Days?
But nobody knows for sure.
Right. No one knows for sure. No, shouldn't you know?
right?
You guys are scientists, shouldn't you know?
Scientate.
It also depends on what the surface is.
Like porous one holds on more as opposed to non-porous?
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
I'm still trying to figure out the toilet paper thing.
Hey, guys, the news isn't good.
No.
And the key is wash your hands and isolate yourself from your, even if you're healthy, from your friends and neighbors, and do what my blue meanie daughter did.
Yeah. She obviously cares about you. If she was letting the kids climb all over you, then you got to question her loyalty to you.
Right. Or your insurance policy.
Now that they've closed the schools, remember, the schools for young kids are cesspools of viral infection.
Oh, yeah.
And so now that they're out of school and they're not having contact with their friends and there are no more play dates, the chances of their getting infected and being asymptomatic but transmitting it to others goes way down.
So I think that it's good that we have zero fatalities with 9-year-olds and under. But isn't that weird? What does that tell you?
No one knows what it tells you. They have robust immune systems, and that can be one reason. Yet, in the flu epidemic of 100 years ago, 1918, 102 years ago, it was the young people who had the strongest immune systems who died in the greatest numbers.
That's weird.
It's very weird.
And people would get off the trolley, like in Philadelphia, which was really devastated. They get off the trolley, they walk 10 feet, and they drop dead.
Wow.
And let me just explain to you what's killing people. It's called cytokine, C-Y-T-O-K-I-N-E, cytokine storm. And that's the body's reaction to infection with the virus. So the virus infection triggers your immune system to put out a massive amount of fluid in order to wash the virus out of your body. Unfortunately, it often overreacts, puts out too much fluid, and you drown. And that's
pneumonia. What's
killing people. It's not even pneumonia. It's just a massive amount of fluid in your lungs, and you can't breathe.
They say if you're having severe respiratory problems, to go.
Immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you'll have to get on a ventilator. Now, there are two emergency room doctors, one in Seattle, where they have, you know, a major problem, and in New Jersey, they're both critically ill on ventilators at the current time.
Did they have pre-existing breathing issues?
No. The New Jersey guy is 70, and the other one is, I think it was 40, but it can attack anybody. It depends on how your immune system.
The guy in the 40s is worrisome, isn't it?
I would think.
Yeah, it is. Damn right it's worrisome. And that's why healthcare providers, like my two of my kids, on the front lines, the nurses, the respiratory technicians, they're really at risk and need to use protective gear if it's available.
Right. Well, we were talking to a couple of emergency room doctors, and they're worried about in Connecticut, the number's going to spike because we're just starting to get tests out there now. And they're worried about too many people overwhelming the emergency room that don't have to be there. So they called it worry well. If you're worry well, in other words, you're sick, but no respiratory problem. You don't feel like you're going to pass out. Don't go. Why are you laughing? You're making me nervous.
Why am I laughing? Because the worried well filled the majority of patients in my practice, and they didn't even have to have symptoms. They worried that they had symptoms, and these are the scary people. Now, like I said, in Aspen, they've locked the emergency room doors. Now, they bring you in through the back way into a special, what's known as negative pressure room, where if you're in that room and there's a virus floating around, it can't be pushed out into the air conditioning system. But it's on a case-by-case basis, and they'll get overwhelmed very quickly.
Doc, I could talk to you all day. I got to go now, but we got to get you back on this week, if it's okay.
I'm around.
All right.
There you go, see?
All right, guys.
All right, thank you. You know, there's always dumbasses, right?
Yes.
And you're seeing stories now with this coronavirus that people are fighting at Costco's.
Yeah.
We need to all calm down here.
Yeah, take a chill pill, people. Like the guy at Costco said, we're all human beings. We're all humans.
Is that what he said?
Yeah, we're all human beings. Let's act like human beings. We're all in this together. Didn't do much. The brawl happened right after that, so.
Right.
Yeah.
Do we have that audio?
I was available on that story, yes.
So you didn't pull it?
I didn't pull it, no. I have the story.
Okay, and then there's news coverage of this woman with, she's an unknown mom. She's going viral with a video in which she explains a new system to her children. They will get to pick from a list of chores, each of which has been assigned a point value.
Right.
I've taken all the toilet paper out of the house, and you have to earn it. So daily, these are the things you have to do. If you want to do extra, you can do extra. So, like, make your bed is one.
One what?
It is a point. And guess what the point's going to be for?
15 points
that
a day.
Is going to use. Example, Lindsay, choose two jobs that you're going to do.
Clean bathroom and straighten bathroom.
So you would get, come over here. You would get one, two, three, four, five, six.
I'm going to go find as much toilet paper.
Pieces of toilet paper.
So six sheets.
So there's a point system at the house. Do some chores. Get some toilet paper.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Do kids really care if their butt's not wiped?
No, they don't. No, sometimes they just drop and run.
If you want a real motivator, just say food. Like,
exactly,
you're not going
right.
to get any food.
Right. You want to eat? Why don't you stay alive?
Right.
Do the chores.
Or no TV time. I mean, think about the things that will really motivate a kid.
No cell phone.
Well, how old are these kids?
Yeah, they sound phones? Young for cell phones, but who knows now?
You know what? 8-year-olds have cell phones now.
Oof.
Probably even less.
They have Twitter right? accounts.
Probably
now.
As soon as you start going to school.
Exactly, right. You have to have one because everybody else has one,
Twitter
too.
Accounts.
They probably do. They have Instagram accounts.
Who's they?
I'm imagining. I'm going with comedy here because, God damn it, I have to.
All right. So that's mom making her kids do chores.
Right. I did find the audio from that brawl, by the way.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
All right, so this is a fight at Costco.
Right. Right.
Hold on. Let me,
A whole bunch of people crowded into one guy.
All right.
From Costco.
What are they trying to do? Get toilet paper?
Yep.
All right. Well,
hold on. Just stop.
Okay.
So what are, tell me what you're seeing.
Okay, what's happening is they're in the main aisle of Costco.
They're in a toilet paper aisle.
There's one poor guy from Costco wearing the red vest, as they always do, with matching plant pants. And there's a whole bunch of people, like carts and carts and
no,
carts.
No, it's blue
around.
Pants and red vest, right?
I actually can't see his pants. I just see the red vest.
So it's a guy with a vest.
Red vest, Costco guy. And he's trying to explain to people trying to get some order because they're all trying to get the toilet paper at once. And this one Asian guy is filming this. And every now and then you see his face just kind of like what the F? And it goes right back to them again.
Okay.
So this is them arguing with the Costco guy before he
How many people?
It. I'd say about 25, 30 people.
25, 30 people.
He's surrounded like custard. Yeah,
fighting over, is there a limit on how many rolls of toilet paper they can buy?
I don't see it in the story. I don't see it. I just see that everybody kind of rushed it, and I guess they were trying to get a semblance of order rather than everybody just kind of like a free-for-all Dodge City.
Right.
So this is him in the middle of all these people.
This is nuts, man.
They're all arguing with him, and he's just going to finally lose it here.
Okay.
At a time like this. So I need you guys to calm down.
Stop her to touch me with that card again.
It's all right, love. She's not going to touch you with the card. Please, guys, everybody, as human beings, let's get together. Come on now, guys. I understand.
Does it seem like people are falling in line or?
Not at first, no. Now, they finally fell in line and everything, but then later on...
Gotta start tasing these people.
But then later on, an actual fight breaks out. I mean, a pretty good scrap.
Turn it down so I can hear you.
There are two people that are down on the ground right now, and they're just going at it.
What's the point? Just you take a roll, and I'll take a roll.
Yeah, well, they don't seem to have that problem over here. I guess one person reached somebody else's car, grabbed the roll. So now the fight's going on, and now one of the guys was so badly beaten, he's actually being taken on a stretcher, and his whole face is bandaged like the Invisible
over
Man.
Over toilet paper.
Over toilet paper, yes. Like I told you, I saw that picture in New Jersey of the police officer guarding the toilet paper at a Home Depot.
Because of stuff like this.
Exactly.
This is what's happening.
This is what's going on. Yeah, because the shelves have been bare, folks see it, and they all rush it, and then boom, next thing you know, there's a fight breaking out. I'm surprised no one's been shot yet.
And we're not even at the surge in numbers yet.
No.
doing the big testing, you know, we're able to test a lot now. So the numbers are going to keep going up because exactly. That's what happens when
right.
you test.
Right.
The more you test, the more numbers turn up.
Right.
Holy crap. Over yeah. toilet paper.
Yep. Exactly. And I remember over during the week, I saw
how much toilet paper do you have at your house?
I have 220 packs.
220 packs?
220 packs, yeah.
Wow.
Right. But I still
you
had.
Might be my new best friend.
I still had. Hey, you want some? I'll take care of you.
Thank
Make up
you.
For the embarrassment of today. All but right. I still had 8 rolls left over from a prior pack.
So you have 28 rolls.
28 rolls, yeah.
Wow, I'm for two right people.
There. Right.
Wow.
Right.
How many times do you poop a day?
It depends on what I ate and how much exercising I did. If I'm working out, I'm good for 3 or 4 times a day.
3 or 4. It seems like a lot.
Yes. That's right.
Andrew?
At least twice.
Twice?
Yeah, at least twice.
Right. I'm once a day.
Really?
That sounds underregulated.
Yeah, really. Meanwhile, I have
what do you
Cheerios.
Mean? What does that mean?
I would think twice a day is probably normal.
Yeah.
Twice seems like a lot. You're probably eating too much.
You know? I eat a lot of salads, a lot of fiber, so.
Oh, maybe
yeah.
I should
if
do
I was
that.
A bird, I'd crap on your windshield, probably.
How many rolls of toilet paper do you have, Andrew?
Right now we have about 12, because I had stocked up on all this stuff weeks ago.
Why?
I have my firstborn came. So
yeah, congrats.
Just get that bill, the house. Thank
when,
you.
When you get that bill, you definitely need it.
But you use baby wipes for that, not toilet paper.
But just stuff for mom, so she doesn't have to worry about it.
Gotcha.
She's still at home with him.
Right.
Wow, you guys are in good shape.
The crisis. Yeah, why? How many you have?
I don't know.
Oh. We want to check.
I don't know. Like Jennifer is in charge of the TP. Yeah.
Listen, looking on the web, on eBay, there was one person. One person, 48 rolls, they wanted $54. For 48 rolls, $54.
That doesn't seem...
So he marked up a little bit, obviously. Well, you figure 48 rolls...
That doesn't seem too bad, though.
It's probably somewhere like around like $20-$25, but $54 one for 48 rolls.
All right, my head hurts now.
I know. But looking at the stores throughout the week, early in the week, I went to the store.
How much food do you have? How many days can you go?
I bought a bunch of like pastas and things and cans and whatnot.
So you stocked up too?
The freezer has been full from Omaha steaks and stuff like that, so I'm good there.
All right.
You know, so I'm good in that department.
All right.
Yeah, water.
But you don't know how many days you can go.
Water, I've got 6 2-gallon jugs of the water.
Okay.
Plus a whole bunch of like smaller Poland Spring bottles.
Okay.
Yeah, so I'm good in that department. But
the thing people don't think about, like they get all this toilet paper, but if your water goes down, you're not flushing your toilets.
No, so. I just crap outside. I don't care.
Start in your neighbor's yard, though.
Exactly.
This was the Jazz and AJ podcast. Thanks for getting through the whole damn thing. Subscribe now and please rate and review us. Unless you have terrible things to say, then please don't. Also, share this podcast with friends. Jazz and AJ in the Morning happens weekdays from 5:30 a.m. to 10 a.m. out of New Haven, Connecticut on the mighty 99.1 PLR.